Case number 12-7061, Ramon K. Bain and Davis Bain and Associates, Inc., Appellants v. MJJ Productions, Inc., and the estate of Michael Joseph Jackson. Mr. Creed for the appellants, Mr. Aspill for the appellees.
May it please the Court. The principal issue in this case is whether a document that was in the possession of the appellant was removed from her possession and was then returned to her after the court granted summary judgment can be considered newly discovered evidence under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 60B2. Now, to be clear, the evidence that's at issue here is the document itself. There's not an issue about the appellant's knowledge of the document or awareness that it existed. There's no question she was aware of the document. She knew about it. She had received it. In fact, she was looking for it at the time the court granted summary judgment. The evidence that was newly discovered is the document itself, the actual letter, which had been removed from her without her knowledge and was then returned to her after the judgment. Now, the district court here ruled that under these circumstances, the letter cannot possibly be considered newly discovered evidence. That ruling was based on an error of law and was an abuse of discretion and should be reversed so that this case can be resolved on in light of all of the facts as opposed to the limited partial set of facts that were before the court on summary judgment.
I guess I should say it for myself. I don't know about my colleagues. On the issue of whether it qualifies as newly discovered, you're pushing on an open door.
Well, the issue of whether it's newly discovered...
The question of due diligence, to me, is much trickier, but maybe my colleagues are worried about the newly
certainly
discovered.
In terms of due diligence, it really gets to the discretion of the court. And the rule, in fact, doesn't say due diligence. It says reasonable diligence. It's a reasonableness test. Whether, under the circumstances of this case, the appellant acted reasonably in her efforts to locate the document and whether reasonable diligence would have led to discovery of the document before the judgment.
I think that you're arguing that knowledge is not dispositive, and so just the fact that you know the document exists doesn't end the discussion. But on the other hand, don't we have to look at knowledge as part of the way we evaluate whether there was reasonable diligence?
Well, certainly knowledge is a factor to be considered as far as reasonable diligence, but it still becomes a question of reasonableness. Now, there's no question she knew about the document, and that's why she was making extensive efforts to locate it. This isn't a case such as one of the cases, Lightfoot, that was relied upon by the district court, where there really was nothing in the record about an effort to find the document before the judgment. Here we have a detailed affidavit that's uncontradicted, unrebutted in the record about her efforts to find, her extensive efforts to find this letter.
The document at issue was faxed to her from the other side?
That's correct. The document was faxed to her from Mr. Jackson.
So so Mr. Jackson or somebody in Mr. Jackson's company would have had it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Would have either had constructive knowledge of it or actual knowledge of it. That's not been disputed.
Or actual possession of it.
Or actual possession. That's not been disputed. There's nothing in the record. There was no affidavit put into the record to say we had no knowledge of this or didn't have it or was outside of our control.
I guess what I'm getting to is the measures that could have been taken to find it, because whatever search she might have conducted of her own files, it seems like one natural place it might have existed is the original document resides with Mr. Jackson or his people.
And again, that goes to the reasonableness of her efforts. Her lawyers asked the court on multiple occasions to permit discovery that would have been directed specifically to this issue.
But not specifically to this document, as far as I saw. But correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't see any request that referred specifically to this document. It referred generally to the need to understand the intent behind the release agreement, and which, of course, has to be an issue squarely in play here. But it seems like things might have turned out differently had there been a reference to this document, because it, in hindsight, seems like it could be significant.
Well, you're correct, Your Honor. Her counsel did not specifically ask for a letter that Michael Jackson faxed to her. Frankly, we wish counsel had asked for that, and it may have... presumably, it would have, if that had been permitted in discovery, presumably it would have resulted in the production of a letter. But, again, the rule requires reasonableness, and it doesn't require absolute perfect diligence and hindsight. It requires reasonableness. And her counsel specifically asked the court for discovery relating to the circumstances surrounding the release agreement, the authenticity of Mr. Jackson's signature. These were reasons that were given as to why discovery was needed. And so this isn't a case where there was no effort whatsoever to enlist the help of the court. Her lawyers did ask for discovery, and they asked for discovery not just in a general matter, but as to certain specific issues that should have and presumably would have resulted in the production of this letter. And so that gets to the issue of whether she was reasonable. And, of course, there's a spectrum of reasonableness, but there is case law, in particular a Fifth Circuit case, Sirio, in which we reference in our reply brief, where a party believed reasonably that files had been destroyed in a fire, later determined after the judgment that they hadn't been destroyed. And the court in that case, in fact, found that there wasn't even a requirement that they have taken efforts to search for the letter.
So I guess it's special where the documents have been destroyed, and at least I don't recall from Sirio any discussion of what one would have normally thought of as alternative sites for duplicates of the documents. Well, here, there's an intuitively promising place for there to be a duplicate.
Well,
files.
And Your Honor, I think the reason Sirio is relevant here is because when we're looking at the reasonableness of the party, in this case, the appellants exercised a greater level of diligence than what is shown in that appellate opinion. They also exercised a level of diligence that was greater than what is reflected in the cases relied upon by the district court, its own opinions in Lands and in Lightfoot. So she exercised more discretion than what was appropriate in Sirio. She exercised the same type of efforts, the same type of diligence, I should say, that the court called for in Lands and in Lightfoot, and frankly, the same type of diligence that that the court said was necessary in this case. When we're talking about reasonable diligence, what would a reasonable person do under the circumstances? She looked for it extensively in her own files. Again, she didn't know that it had been removed by a consultant for a company owned by Mr. Jackson. She looked for it extensively, and her lawyers asked the court repeatedly to allow discovery on issues that would have resulted in the production of this.
Had she known that there was a second copy of this or the original with Mr. Jackson or his company, then would you still take the position that it was reasonable for her to look only at her own files?
Well, if she had known that the document was located in someone's possession or at a particular place, then there might be a different question in terms of what would be considered reasonable under those circumstances. Now, here, the court had before it a set of facts and a record that doesn't speak to that issue. In fact, again, getting back to Ms. Bain's affidavit, it's uncontradicted. It's unrebutted. She described the fact that it was removed from her. She wasn't aware of where it was, and she made extensive efforts to find it. And so that's simply something that the district court would not have been privileged to speculate as to.
I guess what I'm getting at is that I take your point about the diligence of her own search of her own files. I guess what seems trickier is that if there's reason to think that there's another copy somewhere, I think you rightly say that if you know that there's another copy somewhere, then you probably ought to take efforts to obtain that other copy. If there's strong reason to think that there may be another copy of it somewhere, then under reasonableness standard immediately raises the question of whether one should be taking efforts to uncover that copy.
And, Your Honor, to that point, her lawyers did take those efforts. This isn't a case where they were silent on the issue. We certainly wish they had asked more specifically, but her attorneys did, in fact, request discovery that should have and presumably would have resulted in production of this. And I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. To begin with, I disagree with my colleague. The evidence at issue here is not just the letter itself. Obviously, the evidence at issue is the contents of the letter and what the letter reflects. Both the existence of the letter and the contents of the letter were known to Ms. Bain from the date the letter was faxed to her, April 24th.
Counsel, suppose that I knew that there was a document that went down with the Titanic. And it was also clear that the technology was not available to get down to the place where the Titanic lay. And then, before the statute of limitations ran, the technology developed so that I could find it, and I went out and did find it. Would you not say that the document was newly discovered?
I would say the document was newly discovered. I don't know the contents of the document would be newly discovered.
No, I guess in a case like this, documents seem to be very important because oral claims that he received something that's disappeared from Mr. Jackson would probably have produced a lot of laughter on your side.
I don't know that it would have been as strong as having the document itself, but in any event, we don't perceive the document to be directly material to begin with. It's possibly material on its face. We don't think it's conclusively material.
Are you arguing for a categorical rule, though, that if knowledge exists, at the time of trial or summary judgment or whatever, that if you have knowledge, that's dispositive, and the circumstances don't make any difference?
I think the circumstances can occasionally make a difference. If you have knowledge or possession, or knowledge and possession, those are obviously important factors, and whether or not you do anything if you don't actually have the document is another. The court has asked about reasonable diligence here, and I'd suggest that there is virtually none under these circumstances. It was 9 months from the time Ms. Bain filed her complaint until Judge Robertson ruled on the summary judgment motion. As soon as we answered the complaint, we attached a copy of the release and payment agreement that we claimed barred her action. She now claims that the letter rescinds that release and payment agreement. So for 9 months, she knew this was an issue. Not once before Judge Robertson did she raise her hand. Supposedly she looks for 100 hours or 200 hours for the letter that she can't find, but she never raises her hand, or her lawyers never raise their hand before Judge Robertson to ask for his assistance, specifically to ask for his assistance in retrieving a copy of this letter. She says it's a fax to her by Mr. Jackson, and there's a fax track on the top of the letter. So presumably the fax machine from which it was sent would have an electronic image of the document. Presumably Mr. Jackson or his counsel would have the original of the document, if not other copies as well.
You say presumably. It's interesting. Is there actually evidence in this record, apart from our knowledge of how fax machines work, that the estate of Mr. Jackson actually has a copy of this piece of paper?
No, there's none in this record. There's no evidence in this record that we ever had a copy.
That suggests that reasonable, the steps she didn't take that you say she ought to have taken would not have produced this alternative copy.
I don't know whether it would have produced it or not, but it was never requested. I was never asked for it by Ms. Bain. Judge Robertson was never asked to assist Ms. Bain.
You never looked to see if...
I never saw it.
And you never had somebody look?
After the fact, yes. I never saw it before this litigation concluded, before Judge Robertson.
I'm sorry. After the fact, did you ever take steps to see what the situation was among Mr. Jackson's papers?
No. At the time, after Judge Robertson ruled in this case, another partner of mine from my prior firm was involved in the litigation before Judge Lamberth. I was not. And I didn't do anything further after Judge Robertson's ruling.
We actually don't. I mean, I can't remember how the rule was worded. It ruled in terms of the proposition of whether reasonable diligence would have produced the document, or simply is absence of reasonable diligence fatal, regardless of whether reasonable diligence would have produced something.
Well, certainly absence of reasonable diligence is fatal because legally it is inexcusable. And then the question becomes, what was reasonable diligence here? Had Ms. Bain specifically referenced it to Judge Robertson, had her lawyers ever referenced it to Judge Robertson, and steps were taken through discovery or otherwise to either ask us for it, make a document request to us, ask us to look for it, allow depositions to be taken of Mr. Jackson or anyone else who might have knowledge of it,
diligence,
we would know that.
I'm sorry.
I'm just looking at the rule. It's newly discovered evidence that, with reasonable diligence, could not have been discovered in time to move for a new trial. So if in fact, Mr. Jackson did not have in his files, or on the fax machine, a copy, then this seems to qualify as evidence that would not have been discovered, even if we're assuming that use of the discovery process, more aggressive use of it, would in the normal case have produced an alternative copy of the document.
If steps have been taken, I don't know what the results have been, but nobody ever asked. Nobody ever raised it.
No, but what I'm saying is that if you look at the language of the rule, it appears that unless reasonable diligence would have produced the document, it still qualifies as newly discovered evidence that calls for a reopening of the proceeding.
Well, I would think that the fact that it's a faxed copy, supposedly, of a document would suggest that one way or another, the original or another copy of it could have been obtained had reasonable diligence been exercised.
I agree 100%, but I'm just puzzled that we have a record that doesn't answer that question.
Well, the other thing about reasonable diligence, in addition to not asking Judge Robertson to help, not asking me for it, not asking the consultant who had apparently or supposedly taken boxes from Ms. Bain's home about it, or submitting an affidavit to Judge Robertson outlining the existence of the letter and the contents of the letter, there's no record evidence in this case that Ms. Bain ever mentioned the letter or raised the letter and its contents with her own counsel. There's no record evidence of that in this case. And I'd suggest to the court that that demonstrably proves that there is no reasonable diligence here. My opponent has also relied on Serio, so let me address that for a second in the brief amount of time that I have remaining. It's a totally inapposite case, and I'll tell you why. First of all, it's out of the circuit. It's a Fifth Circuit case. It is 54 years old. It was filed, the motion there, the 60B motion, was filed under 60B 1 and 2, whereas here it was filed only under 2. The missing evidence was dispositive in that case. These were the business records of the company relating to sales and inventory, and they were the dispositive issue in the case.
Well, it at least seems opposite in the following respect, and I'm taking this away from diligence and back to the initial question of whether it qualifies as newly discovered, even though it's known about. In that case, the evidence was known about, and the Fifth Circuit said that it constituted newly discovered evidence. So I take it at least stands against what you've said to the effect that this can't be newly discovered because it was known.
Well, I think it's known. Obviously, the existence of it was known. There's no question about that, and the district court so found, and that's why the district court went against Serio in that case. But I think it went off on a reasonable diligence basis, which is, obviously the Court of Appeals disagreed with the district court about the reasonable diligence prong. But even more importantly, since Serio is no longer good law, you look at the first sentence of the last paragraph in the Serio opinion, and it says specifically that the opinion is prefaced on a case called Farrell out of the Fifth Circuit and the Farrell progeny. 21 years later, in Johnson Waste, another Fifth Circuit case in 1980, that rule, basically, the Farrell rule was abrogated and was limited exclusively to B-5 cases, not B-1 and not B-2 cases. And that fact is made plain in Judge Walton's opinion in Lightfoot. So I submit to the court that it is a totally inapposite case, and it obviously is an outlier in any event.
Call it an outlier if you will. What undermines its logic?
I think there was much greater diligence in that case than there was here.
Let's put aside diligence. You used it, I thought, exclusively for the, or you, it was used by the plaintiffs exclusively for the purpose of defining what was newly discovered, and you contest that, and you won on that issue in the district court. And what I want to know is there any illogic in the reasoning of Serio on that issue?
I think the distinguishing factor is the contents of the document. Here we're talking about a single letter. In Bain's case, a single letter with one clause that Bain contends is relevant to her case, as opposed to apparently voluminous records.
I don't understand how that affects the principle of possibly discovered. Why is it?
Because in order to process the insurance claim and to figure out what you have in inventory that was lost from the fire and what your sales records are, et cetera, in order to monetize that claim, you're going to need the detailed records.
Are you shifting to the issue of the significance of this letter in the context of litigation?
Yes. I'm saying that the records...
That's an issue the district judge didn't reach.
I understand. I'm just saying that is a... I think that's a distinction in terms of the records themselves versus the knowledge of the contents of the records. Thank you. I believe my time is up.
Thank you. Did Mr. Key have one? You had 1 minute remaining. We'll give you two.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the district court in this case did establish or attempted to establish a categorical rule that if a proponent is aware of the evidence before the judgment, then it cannot possibly be newly discovered evidence at any point in time. That was the holding of the court. Now, that's not supported by Cereo. Cereo is good law on this point. It's been cited 23 times, including in recent cases. And it's a case that cuts against that attempt to establish a categorical rule. Also, the cases that were relied upon by the district court really don't support the idea of a categorical rule. Those cases involved a number of other factors, including possession, a lack of diligence, strategic decisions to not use evidence that the party was aware of, which there's nothing in this record to suggest that it happened here. And frankly, those other factors would have been irrelevant, would have been unnecessary for the courts to even address in those cases if there, in fact, were a categorical rule, as the district court stated and applied in this case. Now, as to the level of diligence used, we know that, again, getting back to the language of the rule, the question is whether reasonable diligence would have enabled the party to discover the evidence. We know that it wouldn't because she used reasonable diligence and didn't discover it, number one. And secondly,
to be fair, if she had pinpointed this in her opposition to the motion for summary judgment, one hopes that would have caught the attention of the district judge, right?
Presumably it would have.
I have another document, which there ought to be a copy in the defendant's files, which puts a radically different light on the release. I would hope that would catch the district the judge's attention.
And Your Honor, may I just address that point very briefly? Thank you. Again, the record is silent on whether that would have even happened. There's no indication in the record that if she had asked for that, it would have been produced, which again gets to the point of whether reasonable diligence would have resulted in discovery of the document. Thank you.
Are there other questions?
Thank you.